Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Eloise Sheehan, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
So off we go into another grand world, of course, in which we say the words too many cigars. And what's the situation with respect to, obviously, a fleet of submarines, a base on the moon, and satellites? Yes, it's time for another Resonance Rewind with respect to UFO. Well, there we are. It's another Resonance Rewind. And as you may have identified, of course, it's UFO and an extraordinarily interesting UFO episode. And to actually talk us through his views on that before the team actually gets to work, we're delighted to welcome the man behind Quite Media. Yes, indeed, the publishers of Annette André's autobiography, amongst other great, fantastic things. Key ITC expert and general keen all-round wonderful soul. It's Rick Davey. How are you, Rick?
Hi, Alex. Good to speak to you. I'm great. Thanks.
Great. Well, as I say, when we were putting this whole thing together in the first lockdown, we thought Resonance Rewind was going to look at shows which maybe had been, if not overlooked in the past, they maybe sort of just settled into all sorts of other ways, etc. We looked at movies, films, and obviously sort of episodes, etc. And so this particular show came up, UFO. We've covered Identified a wee while back, which was obviously the opening episode of this. And here we have Confetti Check A-OK, something which actually prefigures the notional thing in the 21st century of shows like Lost, etc., where they don't have any sort of general theme tunes at all, basically. They just go straight into the action. There's no traditional Gerry Anderson opening adventure thing. It's just whang, we're straight into that whole notion of Straker going back into his time and his memories and his reflections and so on and so forth. And it's certainly got a lot of interesting adult themes to it. But Rick, what did you make of this particular episode?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting episode. When we think of TV of that era, it was very rare for action adventure shows, which essentially is what UFO is, although it has sci-fi elements to it. It's very unusual for shows like that for you to discover any backstory or anything personal about the lead characters. If you think of, I don't know, Doctor Who, The Saint with Roger Moore, Danger Man, anything from around that era, you didn't know anything about the lead character. It was just story of the week, you know, rescue of the week or whatever. So I think it was really interesting that in an action adventure show, we got to learn the backstory of the lead character and find out a bit more about his personal life. I found that really interesting. Gerry Anderson, I think, for a long time had wanted to move away from the sort of puppet shows and into sort of live action adult drama. I think it was really brave of him to have a sci-fi show, which, as I say, essentially was rescue of the week. Oh, there's a UFO coming. Let's blow it up this week and stop it from invading the Earth. To have a kind of, I mean, we would probably call it soap elements in a way, where you get to learn a bit more about the backstory of the characters. And I thought that was really brave for that time, because I'm sure a lot of people were switching on just to see us defeat the aliens.
I mean, you're a key member, of course, of the Unmutual Society for the Prisoner, and we were talking about having empathy with lead characters and so on. And in certain ways, I think Ed Bishop's portrayal of Ed Straker is something which is almost as cold and callous as the portrayal that we saw Patrick McGoohan obviously give to Number Six. So it's difficult to feel sympathy, really, with him in this sense, insofar as if he's taken that route of actually working for or developing the Supreme Headquarters Alien Defense Organization, then obviously he can't have a relationship. So what's he doing trying to actually have his cake and eat it?
That's a very good point. He's not a warm and cuddly character, is he, in that sense? I don't have a lot of sympathy for him. I think all our sympathy is with the wife in this episode. And there's another episode, I don't know if your viewers or yourself have seen, called A Question of Priorities, which delves kind of further into this idea of split loyalties between obviously needing to do your job and a secure job and saving the planet and having a personal life as well. And it's all that particular episode is all about, you know, having to choose between his son and you know, the UFO organization Shadow. So I think you're exactly right. There's not a lot of sympathy to be had to the character, but I think it's a great performance from Ed Bishop, in the same way, as you say, McGoohan in The Prisoner isn't a particularly warm and cuddly character, but you still end up kind of feeling not sympathy, but you put yourself in his position and wonder, what would you do if, you know, you were trying to be happily married and your job was a very important national job? I don't know how I would cope with that, but you're right. He wants to have his cake and eat it, doesn't he? But all my sympathies are with the wife.
It's certainly an excellent performance by Suzanne Neave, I think, who incarnates that particular aspect there. There's also, of course, a question mark, I suppose, really, and this also echoes a question of priorities as well, without any spoilers for that episode, which in many ways is the sequel to Confetti Check A-OK, and yet actually we see it, or we would have seen A Question of Priorities in the running order before Confetti Check A-OK, really.
Yes, we would, that's right. So I think this episode's a kind of nice segue into when you watch A Question of Priorities and you see that he has an estranged wife and that he has a son, you do kind of think to yourself, well, how did the situation get to that? It was great that we had this Confetti Check A-OK episode to kind of explain the backstory of that. As I said at the beginning, really, really brave of Gerry Anderson to do that.
Very much so. And if we add on to that, of course, in terms of sympathy characters or unsympathetic characters, I must admit, I think a few years ago, I used to think Alec Freeman was okay as portrayed by George Sewell. This time around, I think he's almost Mephistopheles to the notion of Ed Straker. He's always sort of basically pushing the line of duty and things from that. And there's almost a sort of sense that actually maybe that's the relationship that actually is more husband-wife than actually the relationship he actually had with his original wife.
That's a very good point. And it's a good performance by him, but he's quite a, when you watch the whole series, he's again not a character you have a lot of sympathy with. He kind of tends to ogle the ladies. He tends to kind of be quite sexist in that way. Again, it's a character which, you know, in modern day times, we kind of turn our noses up a little bit at. But you're right. I mean, the job generally is what Straker's married to, isn't it? And everything that comes with that. He can't have, a meaningful, real relationship. And again, very unusual for us to see lead characters in that way. You'd never have turned around and said about Roger Moore, always, he's struggling with his wife or whatever. You didn't know any backstory about characters in shows at that time. So I think that's really interesting. When you watched this, Alex, did you feel the same, that you were watching something a little bit different to anything you'd kind of seen before for that era?
Yeah. Very much so. I mean, it was one of those things, if memory serves, and one goes back to the time, this was it was originally screened, and certainly in the Tyne Tees region, late on a Sunday night. By then, of course, the Wednesday evening showings had kind of moved. I think the series had actually moved into obviously 26 episodes, but the latter part very much received the kind of 10 p.m. on a Sunday night thing. So you always got a sense there that it was, if not forbidden fruit, something which you thought, well, school the next morning, let's just sort of... this is quite interesting. And you're kind of left thinking, well, it's not UFO, and yet it is. It's a kind of more adult line on UFO, and yet it is. And certainly looking back again, and obviously seeing it through the eyes of how does it resonate across the decades, it does sort of function. I can still understand and have sympathy with the critical view that maybe some of the acting is a little bit flat. But then you see the other aspect, of course, within that is, what else can we expect when we've got a series which is very much focused on people doing their duty and that balance between duty and personal life, etc. It's not Star Trek, for instance.
No. You're quite right. I think it's nice that there is a kind of, I wouldn't call it a story arc. It's not Lost or Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know, you haven't got this continuum where you're trying to find out where the characters are going to go. But he'd been doing these puppet shows, you know, things like Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet, which we all love. And he wanted to move into live action drama. I don't think there'd have been much point in him just doing Thunderbirds with real people walking around. I think he wanted to do something a bit deeper. I mean, UFO, when you get to the last two episodes, it does, in a good way, it goes absolutely bonkers, doesn't it? Some of the later episodes.
Let's not go psycho bonkers on this one, Rick. That's another thing entirely.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I think it shows that Gerry Anderson wanted to push boundaries. And it would have been easier for him to do, let's have Straker, you know, defeat another alien invasion this week. So I think it was interesting that he went down this route. And I think it's a shame that other than Space 1999, he didn't really do much more live action after UFO and the Protectors. But that was just crime of the week stuff, wasn't it?
Space Precinct, I suppose, would actually sort of get people saying, well, what about Space Precinct, etc. But if we just go back to, again, some of the parallels between Gerry Anderson as an auteur, etc. One thing which always stuck with me and seemed to kind of be even more emphatic as I've seen UFO over the years is the kind of notion that you could see General Henderson as almost being an analogue for Lou Grade. And of course, Ed Straker as Gerry Anderson himself. And of course, we see really that manifested in Space 1999, that kind of breakdown of the Gerry and Sylvia Anderson relationship. Do you think that actually this could be a case of the artist actually having his work reflected in some of the sort of things that he's producing as well?
You know what? I think you might be right. That's a very, very good point. And something I'd not really considered before. I think Henderson's a really key character in the series as a whole, isn't he? Without that battle, you don't quite get the same sense of the, not the danger that Straker's life is kind of involved with, because obviously we know he's dealing with dangerous things. But you do get that sense that there's always that sword of Damocles hanging over him, isn't there? From Henderson. And again, you wouldn't necessarily get that so much. You get it in cop shows with the kind of with the kind of boss with the cigar, you know, sat in the office, you know, saying he's got the DA on his back or whatever that particular week's going on about. Again, that's a good observation, Alex. I think it's UFO is a really underrated series. I think it has a lot more elements in it than just the model work and the spaceships and the uniforms and the girls and whatever that kind of it's probably famous for. I think there is a lot more character depth going on there. And I think Gerry, you're right, would have put a lot of himself into that show. And same with Space 1999, as you say, because he'd finally got the chance to do that. You can't really do that with puppets.
Well, it is certainly something where even the location of the Harlington Straker Film Studios and the secret agency that works underneath that. And just very briefly, I know we're looking at a question of priorities, and I've never actually shared this with our mutual friend and colleague and, of course, keeper of the Anderson flame, Jamie Anderson. But I often think actually of Jamie visiting the set of Terra Hawks or Space 1999 and so on in the same way as actually Straker's child actually gets driven around in the Secret Service mobile on a question of priorities and visits the set and all the other factors. Although once again, it's interesting looking at it through 21st century eyes, there are a number of areas where I think, would you want a child actually witnessing a mugging on set or a murder on set? Would you actually go down that route? But then again, after Joe 90 and his sort of psychological challenges that he'd be faced with all of those brain patterns and the number of assassinations he actually was involved with, I suppose anything goes.
Yes, it was a stroke of genius, really, by Gerry Anderson, wasn't it, to set the UFO series within a TV studio, because that way they didn't really have to go and do any location work. They could just film at the studio that they were filming the actual show at. And you're right that the question of priorities does feature a lot of work on the sort of back lot at MGM Studios. And, of course, you see some sets from The Prisoner series in that episode as well. But that's great executive producer work, isn't it, to save money on locations.
Precisely. Irwin Allen would have been envious, I'm sure, on that place. It's not stock footage, Irwin. It's using the sets, although he was known for that as well. Okay, so let's move to the nitty-gritty of the piece, Rick, and we've had a discussion with the team. Are there any particular favourite characters in this particular episode that you warm to, that you sort of feel is okay? We haven't, of course, even mentioned, and we will talk about this again with the rest of the team, the exemplary, so again, exemplary music by the awesome Barry Gray, which again, I think knocks it out of the ballpark in terms of the quality of the theme as well. But are there any other sort of aspects of the episode you'd like to particularly raise?
No, I think we've covered most things. I think you're right about the music. I mean, the music is exemplary. I think what drives this episode is Ed Bishop's performance, because I think you've got it absolutely spot on. He's not playing a particularly likable person, but yet we're still really gripped by what's happening. And we don't have sympathy for him, but we still are interested to know that that has happened. And it does explain a lot about the sort of person that he is throughout the rest of the series. And although you might argue, yes, it's not your typical UFO episode. Yes, it's not particularly a lot of special effects in it. It's not UFO, but it is the point you quite rightly made earlier on. But I think this episode is very important to the series, because when you watch other episodes and you wonder why Straker is the way he is, I think you just put this episode on, or A Question of Priorities, and you get that explanation. You don't get that in Doctor Who or The Saint or The Prisoner or Danger Man or any sort of ITC show of the era. You don't get that backstory. And I think it's important to understand the Straker character for the rest of the series to have this episode. So, yeah, while it's not my favourite episode, I don't think it's anybody's favourite UFO episode. It's not typical of the series. I think it's very important to have it there. And I think that's the importance of this episode, is that it's there, not necessarily to sit there and rewatch it and rewatch it and enjoy it as you might do other episodes, you know, like Ordeal or Time Lash or other episodes which are kind of really enjoyable. But I think it's important that it's there.
Rick Davey, of course, genius behind Quite Media and so many other things, an ITC expert. Huge thanks. And hopefully, Rick, you'll be able to join us for our next visit to, of course, the world of ITC. And that, of course, is the opening episode of what I regard as the first authentic British superhero series, with Secret Identities, of course, as well, with the Agents of Nemesis. That would be the beginning episode of The Champions. Will you be up for that?
I certainly would be. I'd love to chat about that with you. Fantastic series, fantastic episode. Very much looking forward to it.
S-H-A-D-O. Well, we've heard some of the views there of one of those wonderful ITC experts that have emerged over the years, and authors, of course, with the wonderful Rick Davey, and the team of Resonance Rewind experts are all together as well. We've got Jenny Bill with us. How are you, Jenny?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Excellent. We've also got the inevitable, ineffable, undecipherable Robin Pierce. No, he's not too undecipherable, but he's there. How are you, Robin?
I love the fact that I'm inevitable. I've only heard Thanos described as inevitable before.
It's a way forward, and it is actually critical as we actually head through that. We battle on regardless. We'll hopefully be joined by Rebecca Bond, and indeed we had hoped to be joined by Eloise Sheehan as well, but clearly there's one or two sort of challenges there. We would have actually just had to describe her whole sort of set of situations within that whole field. So let's go back to the start of the whole sort of programme and consider the joyous world of the Harlington Straker Studios, after it was built, of course, in the 1970s, and what everything was actually expecting when we saw the UFO studios being built and put together. Rebecca, welcome to the Joys of Resonance Rewind. You might have had a chance to listen to Rick Davies' views. What are your thoughts on Confetti Check A-OK?
So I really enjoyed it, and as someone who's never seen any other episodes before, I think it worked really well. And I'm very aware that it is a flashback to earlier aspects of his life, which I believe is correct, consider I've never seen it. So I really like that aspect of it, which made me want to watch more, because from the sounds of it, it does reveal quite a lot about his life. And I really like the human side of it, because it really got to see his battles with what he wanted to prioritise. You know, he had to prioritise his marriage or his job. And I think that was really interesting to see. So I enjoyed it. I really like the characters, and it made me want to watch more.
Interesting, because I mean, I have big issues with respect to something which I'm actually illustrating as far as the whole piece is concerned. Now, my issue is basically with that situation there. There we actually have Aisha Ruff effectively being forced, quite literally forced, to actually choke on cigar smoke, which obviously is being used to celebrate the birth of a child. All sorts of problems with respect to that. And again, she's clearly not keen on that whole experience of being forced to actually undergo the cigarette scenario. And I just thought, I don't know. I know it's of its time, but, you know, who knows? Maybe if she unmutes herself, Eloise Sheehan might have something to actually say with respect to that. Eloise, I think we can see you once again in vision. If you take over your microphone thing, can we actually now hear you? Would you like to tell us what you thought of UFOs, confetti check, A-OK? Sadly, we still can't hear her, but that adds to the whole quality of life and various other elements as well. Let's turn to Jenny. I know you're a huge Ed Bishop fan, I should say. Ed Straker, of course, the role for which he is totally associated with, apart from Captain Blue, with respect to the Captain Scarlet sort of scenario. So what did you make of this particular episode, which, as I say, is very much a kind of precursor to explaining maybe the obsession with... bit like academics, really. We can't have a relationship and the actual job. You've got to go for one or the other. That's it.
Well, yes, I am a huge UFO fan, as everybody I think knows. And although this is not my favourite episode, I think it's a really important episode. And I also think it's quite a unique episode. I mean, maybe for the time and also really for the series. We know that when you see Straker, he's this very stoic type of character, but here it shows that he's a fallible human with emotions, and he's trapped in a situation, and he knows what his future is and what his duty is, but at the same time he longs for love and marriage and family and children, and I think he knows that if he wants to be the commander of Shadow, he can never have the other things that he wants as well. So yeah, I think it's a great, I think he plays the part really well, showing that he's torn between his duty and his sadness. And I really like the bit where he's in the hospital and he's standing and it's raining and they show it through the glass, and it's like it's a sort of simile for the tears that he is crying inside, because he's the sort of person that doesn't show any emotion.
Personally, I was always a little bit suspicious, and I would always say that anybody who on the honeymoon effectively has to change clothes behind a hedge is a little bit dodgy from that point of view. But still, I suppose new suits, new wife, new husband, new life. That's the line that was actually taken from that point of view. Jessica Burtis, welcome to Residence Rewind from North Carolina, of course, which inevitably brings to mind that wonderful quote that I thought was really summed up the whole essence of ITC in the 1970s. And of course, the secret organization of Shadow, that effectively my government has stipulated the commander-in-chief must be an American. My government has stipulated the commander-in-chief must be an American, which is technically why, Jessica, you are our commander-in-chief, despite what Robin might like to say. You know, it's a different line. So, Jessica, what did you make of UFO and confetti check A-OK?
I thought it was very interesting getting to see some background. I had watched the wrong episode again at first, and I realized and went back and watched the right one. So I got to see a couple episodes. But I really liked seeing the background. It was so sad. It was a very sad episode. Mary deserved better. She really did.
Yeah, again, portrayed very effectively by Suzanne Neve, who I think was still teaching up until the sort of start of the century. Okay, Robin, we've reversed things around slightly in this particular aspect. Would you like to give us a little précis of UFO and confetti check A-OK?
Yeah, well, as we've already alluded to, this is a prequel episode. Yeah, it's a flashback, but it's also a prequel. And it takes us right to the very beginning of why the Shadow Organization was formed. It takes place, I think, just after the pre-title sequence of the opening episode Identified, which we've already covered. And it fills in a lot of gaps. It shows the priorities that Straker has to choose. And how the pressures of his job really cost him his marriage. And I don't think that anybody's really at blame on this one. It's not a particularly misogynistic episode, other than the unfortunate scene with Aisha smoking a cigar at the beginning.
And also an unfortunate scene when you feel as though the only way to actually deal with a woman who's obviously very disappointed that she thinks her husband's having an affair, that she gets slapped and then collapses and falls down the stairs. That's not great, is it? Let's be honest.
Well, it's not great, but it was a tense and emotional scene.
Let me in, Mary. Mary, let me in. What's happening in there?
It shows his mounting I'm not justifying anything. It shows his mounting tension as he's torn between the job, which he has to keep absolutely secret, and keeping his marriage alive. I think it was a really bold move on behalf of the production company to do this one, because you've got an episode of UFO with no UFOs, none of Derek Medding's special effects, no explosions, no moon base. It's a purely human episode. It's UFO without the UFOs. And they did a few really outstanding episodes based on relationships. A Question of Priorities is one. The Dalatec Affair is another one. But this one, I think they really knocked it out of the park. And let's bear in mind that it was a time in television when we didn't flesh out the main characters. I mean, we didn't know much about the backgrounds of the man or the men from Uncle. We knew nothing about the backgrounds of the people from Mission Impossible, Thunderbirds, Stingray, none of those. But here, they actually take the leading man, the guy who's taking all the decisions every day, and they show him why he is what he is. And I think it's a very, very bold move. And the characterizations and the performances all round were really great. I mean, I realize that you've said that you thought that the George Sewell character of Alec Freeman was kind of a Mephistopheles. And I think that was giving a bit too much credit, because the real manipulator there was the absolutely loathsome General Henderson, who I've never liked.
But as I said, I think in conversations with Rick Davey, I think General Henderson could have been seen as a cipher for Lou Grade in certain ways. I'll quote from the text that was produced for a cult TV text a few years ago, the Golden Age of ITC. For Gerry Anderson, the memories of UFO are inexplicably linked with a breakdown in his private life, which effectively was to have an even more dramatic impact on his next show, of course, Space 1999. In Gerry's own words, at the time, I probably was quite happy with the series, but I wouldn't say it was the happiest show I've ever worked on, and that was because of the problems with Sylvia and myself. The trouble between Sylvia and myself was getting worse by the minute, and that made the work somewhat unpleasant. So, again, I think there were art imitating life, etc. Rebecca, I mean, I've got a perfect drop the mic moment, which I think Ed Bishop delivers in a way which I just thought, what are you trying to do here? And it was just the line where having the discussion with the possible international group of funders. And he says, Monsieur Duval, I understand you have three daughters. I pray that you never find yourself looking down at the body, at the mutilated body of one of them. I hope the next UFO incident is not in your hometown. Drop the mic, leave, etc. Thank you. Good evening. In fact, his closing words were, thank you for your time. Effective. I mean, he got the money, etc. But what did you make of the characterizations that were seen with it within the episode?
I think very interesting. I think, as we said, we really see the human side of it. And as Robin pointed out, you really see him, you know, boiling to his breaking point. And I think that's really, really interesting, because you do see that really human side of him. And yeah, that was quite fantastic, that scene. But if that's the kind of conference-y kind of scene that I'm thinking about, I'm pretty sure that dragged on for ages. And for me, that was the part that was the hardest to get through. Until it got to that point, I was like, oh, that was worth watching. And I think that was really fantastic. He really did put his foot in there and make his voice known, which I really, really enjoyed. So yeah, the characterization, I think, is brilliant. And as I said, it makes me want to look into his life and his story a bit more.
Shadow security makes the CIA look like a bunch of Sunday school teachers. Jessica, did you have any sort of characters that you empathized with? Did you sort of feel secretly, oh, that Alec Freeman, he's such a lad, basically. He's always sorry when he actually takes people away from their families and such like stuff. Mm-hmm.
felt really bad for Mary. I mean, I felt bad for Ed beginning too. I think I lost a lot of sympathy when he slapped her. But I felt really bad for Mary. She just got the short end of the stick through the whole thing. But her mom was so scheming, like trying to set up the photographer to follow him. And I didn't like that. Her mom irritated me with that. But I think Mary, she was just trying to be very positive throughout the situation. And you could understand why she was so hurt, not knowing what was going on with like her husband just being gone all the time. And I just felt so bad for her.
Yeah, it's interesting because the mother is so well articulated and yet we never see her. We never hear her. She's basically a voice off screen. The only interaction we actually have is via the telephone call, in which obviously Mary says, no, he's not having an affair. Of course not. When the seed's already been sown that clearly he is. And moves on from that. Jenny, in terms of, again, your overall sort of view of the series, is this something that you feel has matured well over the years, or does it still sort of sometimes have a little bit of clunkiness in it?
I suppose anything that's 50 years old or whatever it is, 40 years old, is going to have a slight amount of clunkiness in it, because everything moves on and becomes, more finer produced. But I actually think overall, I still watch it and I still think it stands up very well. And I think the acting is good. I think they had some good actors in. So even if they had some scenes where, I thought her father was really strange. He never really said anything and he just kind of, and there was some kind of odd bits.
We'll have a quiet chat. We'll sit down and have a quiet chat. That's his longest line of dialogue.
He didn't say anything for ages, and even when he was banging on the door and he came in and she's at the bottom of the stairs, he just kind of, he didn't go, oh my God, what's happened? He just sort of looked.
Very British, very British, Jenny.
But I'm British and I'd go, oh my God, what's happened? I have to say I have no sympathy for Mary, though. I think somebody that marries somebody that's in the military knows that that person is going to have secrets and is going to be traveling and working and all the rest of it. And he was clearly very frustrated and very unhappy. And by just thinking about herself and being totally selfish, she made him more unhappy. That's how I feel about her. Sorry. Sorry, Jess.
Interesting sort of perception in terms of how obviously they got together in the first place. I mean, Rebecca, looking at that, I mean, clearly in terms of gender roles, I mean, this is a series that, again, it was contemporary for 1970, even though the UFO world is set in 1980, which again is 40 years back from our particular time. Did you feel that some of the gender issues that were there, in terms of obviously the notion of making coffee, the notion of the way, I mean, I've showed you that initial sort of opening photograph with Aisha Brough and a life of that. Did you feel as though sometimes, as I said in my discussions with Rick Davey, it certainly isn't Star Trek?
Yeah, I definitely feel the gender representation could have been better. As you said, there was a lot of stereotypical roles, and Mary, for example, although she had a big part in the film, it was very sort of housewifey. But I suppose you do have to look at it in its context. I mean, it's a product of its time, and I think there were still female roles in it, so you can't really overlook that. But yeah, there were some problematic scenes, especially the one that that you've got in the background there, the force feeding the cigar. Yeah, very, very strange.
Don't let me get started on phallic symbolism and cigars and Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
We're going to a different line entirely.
I feel like I didn't have to see it. I don't think it added anything to the plot. I don't think it was very relevant at all. And I think that was probably the most problematic thing. Also, the slapping Mary was not necessary, I don't think. And I understand Robin's take on it, but I know you're not justifying it, Robin. I understand that you're saying it's, you know, it's an emotional outburst and it kind of adds to his character, but that just made me lose a bit of sympathy for him. A bit like Jessica, I think I was a bit more sympathetic to Mary and her situation. I just think it's interesting to see how the gender roles are in it, and I do think it could be improved, but I suppose you have to look at it in its time, I suppose.
Well, as I said to Rick Davey, I felt very much that if you want a character who's very much in the same vein as sympathy as Ed Straker, go for number 6 in The Prisoner. And at least number six doesn't actually sort of get involved with get married and actually have a relationship, because again, it cuts two ways. That's my line, etc. Mm-hmm. It's not just a case of the wife who actually needs to know, oh, I'm marrying somebody in military intelligence, etc. It cuts two ways. And to actually go and leave your wife actually in the hospital, basically because you've been dragged away by a man who basically says, oh, here, have another cigar. He does like his cigars. I tend to think, yeah, sympathy drops on from that point of view, much as obviously Ed Straker does. Robin, again, you've heard obviously Rick Davies' view. You've heard the sort of line that for me, it's nip and tuck between number six and Ed Straker in terms of sympathetic characters in a universe that we have. I suppose they're both sort of synonymous, really. Any further thoughts?
Well, I'm very much with Jenny on this one, because I feel that the what we have here is a marriage that was doomed from the very start.
They were going to Greece for their honeymoon, inevitably. You know, it was going to be a problem.
Well, he would not have gone, you know, he would not have been as available as a husband. He wouldn't be, he'd be gone for long stretches of time.
But he took off the uniform. He took off his uniform and got dressed as a civilian.
Again, that was symbolic, wasn't it? Mm. Entirely symbolic. He's switching from one identity to another identity. But also, if you think about the unfortunate slap scene, then okay, you lose a bit of sympathy, but towards the end of the episode, he calls the shadow operative who's just become a father and tells him to take a week's furlough, something that nobody ever said to him. So he clearly has learnt from his own tragic past and doesn't want this guy to make the same mistake. So he's in his own way. I think he's trying to make amends. So, I don't see any real comparison between Straker and number six, because we didn't know anything of number six's past. And I can't imagine anybody wanting to ever marry that unpleasant man.
Well, at least he would be working 16 hours a day for 10 years, which is a route for...
He was in prison! It's in the title!
So... Jenny, in terms of other aspects of the series, anything you'd like to raise that kind of still gives this a sort of quality that obviously the subsequent series, which we looked at last week, of course, Space 1999, which was effectively UFO, the second series, maybe lacked?
I think that being before Space 1999, I mean, I really like the costumes, the set. I mean, I think the music is fantastic, the same as Space 1999. I love the moon base. I mean, I know that people didn't agree with me last time, but I mean, I love the costumes. I love the wigs. I love the moon base. I always wanted to be a moon base girl. I think...
Which, of course, we don't see in this episode, as Robin alludes to earlier.
Oh, I know.
Rebecca's confused. What, purple wigs? What's happening there?
I'm always wanting a purple wig. And I think this came first, and I think it was kind of like the trendsetter, or maybe so. To me, Space 1999 was always like the poor man's UFO. I mean, I really like Space 1999, but I felt like it was the sort of poor man's UFO, because I don't think you could really do better than UFO
which in many cases was the poor man's Captain Scarlet. But that's another line entirely about another sort of issue. And another sort of scenario. Just want to actually sort of return back to Jessica for a few moments again in terms of how the narrative comes through. And again, this is another sort of gripe I have against. It's not George Sewell. I think he's doing well. But in terms of the sort of notion of the relationship between Alec Freeman and Ed Straker, I'm reading a homosexual subtext, a homoerotic subtext there right across the base. Even explicitly alluded to when you get Alec Freeman saying, come back and stay with my place. What's the point of driving home? You know, I'll call Mary in the morning. What?
I don't think I read that. Like, I think I was just so focused on Ed and Mary that I was just like so intent on their relationship. And anytime he was away from Mary, I was like, no, go back. I need to see what's going on. I need to know what's happening with them. So I feel like, I don't know, now I need to rewatch it maybe and like see it with that angle.
Well, it's also that, and also the hand on the shoulder that comes together. I mean, in that particular sequence, it's almost Freeman's barely able to actually prevent himself from actually sort of reaching out to his hand and actually go. And I think just let it go. If you're going to go down that route, basically. Now I understand your fondness for cigars, Robin. Is this doing a step too far?
Whoa! Take a step back there. No, no, no. Not Alec and Ed, surely. No, sir, no.
I think read it on that sort of level, you get an interesting preferred leading come across, but it would be interesting.
Yeah, but
to
you've
talk
got
about.
To remember, sometimes, I'm sure Freud might have said, a cigar is just a cigar.
Ed Bishop was very much associated with this role. It was one of the reasons I think he was very pleased that I didn't refer to him as Commander Straker, but was referred to as Captain Blue when he made his debut back in the 1980s not the Midweek Drive then, but another show that we used to do. Sadly, no longer with us. Was this the pinnacle of his career, do you feel?
Who's he asking?
Jenny, I mean, go for it.
I don't know who you're asking.
it's an open question.
Probably, yes. I think that and Captain Blue probably what defined him.
Yeah, okay. Robin?
Well, he's got a very distinctive voice, and he'd popped up in a couple of the Sean Connery Bond movies. But this is the one, for me, that he's best known for, because you've got the voice and, of course, you've got the face as well on screen, rather than just doing a voiceover for a puppet or a brief cutaway as a technician in Spectre headquarters or wherever it would be.
To me, he would be Philip Marlowe, and also he would also be the character of Death of a Salesman. He did a superlative aspect of Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman. Rebecca, we're almost coming around to the notion of qualifying the details. I've already got Rick Davies' score. I've got his in mind, and I'll share what he actually gave with the thing in a few moments. But from your own point of view, any particular other highlights of this episode you'd like to draw attention to? What about the wonderful vintage 1970 vehicles, for instance?
You know what? That is actually one of the things that I always love about these series, is that it takes you back to that time. I mean, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. But I do love seeing the lifestyle and, you know, the characters and how they're a product of their time. And as we've talked about, I think Ed is a perfect example of that. I think you see him in that role, you see women in their roles, which are often very stereotypical. I think that's interesting to see. But again, I just really want to draw the attention to the human side of it, because that for me was really interesting to get an insight into his life and, you know, the conflicts that he faced. And I think I was sympathetic with him to that level, because I think that's something that we've all probably faced before. You know, you have to make your priorities, and for it to be that, you know, does he take up his vital role in the defence against extraterrestrial life, or does he choose his marriage? I mean, one sounds more exciting than the other to me, but, you know, he has to make that choice, and it's very difficult. So that was the bit that I love the most. I love following his journey in that, and it made me want to read more about his life and watch more, of course. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Certainly the companion episode that I shared with Rick earlier was a question of priorities. And actually, maybe it's a trilogy, because actually the reason General Henderson is actually in the wheelchair is because he's had the crash at the beginning of the episode that we actually had, we looked at a few weeks ago, which was identified. So it does sort of fit into to place within that and provides a story arc. I also mentioned, and as Robin alluded to, quite a bold move to actually step away from having a kind of title sequence that is so connected with 60s and 70s series in particular, just actually go straight into the action within that whole field. Jessica, what about yourself? What sort of reflections do you take away from this? And incidentally, can you share with us what was the other episode that you watched by mistake to start off with?
So I accidentally watched, I think it's called like ESP.
ESP, yes. Very, yes. It's very so scary, and again, opens up a whole range of other aspects there.
Yes, it was very creepy. I don't know why that's the episode I accidentally watched, something with Amazon. Yeah. So I got to enjoy a couple episodes. It was a good one. I think something, and it was in both episodes, but I love the retrofuturism aspect of this. I love how like Adam Punk it is. Like, I just love the aesthetics of these episodes and how fun they are. Like, I just want to dress up in those costumes with like the pink or the purple wigs, and like, it just looks like so much fun. Yes, I agree with Jenny on that. I think that's so cool. I love just like the visuals of it, honestly.
Well, and it also has to be said with respect to ESP, not that we're analysing that in this particular routine. Once again, it's Ed and Alec who go off to the haunted house together, hand in hand. I mean, it's just, it is writ large. I mean, you can take your Batman and Robin scenarios, and that's mild by comparison to Ed's unrequited affection for Ed Straker, or rather Alec's unrequited affection for Ed Straker. It's there.
You not actually think that Alec is like... It's like the conscious, the inside Ed Straker's head, because he's like has turmoil over things. And it's always Alex that says to him, no, you can't do this. You can't do that. You have to do this, that, and the other. So it's like that little voice inside Straker's head is Alec. That's how I always see him.
Well, actually, I've always thought that Alec was numb to just about everything, because whenever Ed is in turmoil in his office, Alec Freeman walks in, heads straight to the bar, pours himself a shot, then he sits down. The guy must have been hammered most of the time.
And a cigar, of course. But yeah. What the hey? Okay, so let's go around the whole thing. Jenny, what is your score out of 10 for... ESP, not for
it's
ESP.
It's got to be a 10. What do you think it's going to be? It's going to be 10.
It is a 10. Okay. All right. Jessica.
Probably, I think I'm between like a 7.5 and an 8. So somewhere in that range. I don't know.
I'm going for 7. I might go to 7.5 on the basis of I do actually have the UFO mug to hand here for the shadow system. So, you know, that on that basis, I might go 7.5. I will reveal now, Rick Davey, what score out of 10, if we're pushing you, would you actually award Confetti Check A-OK?
I'm giving it a solid 6 because... It's not up there with the very best of UFO, but it's important that it's there, and it's an enjoyable episode to understand the characters.
6 out of 10 from Rick Davey. 6 out of 10. It's Robin.
This, for its content, for its time, for its sensitivity, for its boldness, I'm going straight for a rare 10.
And Rebecca?
I'm going to go for a 7 as well. As I said, I think I need to watch more to really understand him as a character, but it made me want to watch more. So that puts it on a high 7.
And the thoughts of Eloise, who's managed to actually send in some views via the social media. She likes UFO. She likes the voice of the main actor. That would be Ed Bishop. She found it very soothing, but didn't actually listen to much of what he said. Probably because the voice was too soothing. She felt it was a really sad episode from both his and his wife's point of view. And she does need to know more, like, what happens? She did like that for a science fiction show, it was more of a 1940s-style romance. But she does actually qualify that by saying that they could have done the whole thing in 10 minutes. Her final score for Eloise Sheehan, 8 out of 10. I think a solid episode from my point of view. I can't possibly go down the line of Robin and Jenny and sort of the maximum routine from that, because where do you go with that? But yes, interesting. Okay, we go from one organization, the Supreme Headquarters Alien Defense Organization, which we've been spending some time with this week. And of course, we leave the whole world of Gerry Anderson to one side. And next week, we actually head into a whole new field with the United Network Command for Law and Enforcement. Nevertheless, we don't think ahead in a kind of time-based system there, in which we might well be joined by the writer of this particular episode, The Thrush Roulette Affair, Arthur Weingarten, and we'll probably be joined by Jonathan Lindsley as well, who remembers actually how he used to, and this is Jonathan Lindsley from Pirates of the Caribbean, etc., he used to actually have to have the ultimate decision on Thursdays. Did he go to the Scouts, or indeed go to the Cubs, or actually watch an episode of The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? This was the challenge that he was actually faced with. We'll find out more about Jonathan Lindsley and his viewings of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. as we consider that episode in the next edition of Resonance Rewind. For the moment, to Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Rebecca Bond and Jenny Bill, what's happened to Eloise? We don't know. She's obviously been silenced by aliens. That's the whole thing. Keep on keeping on. and bye for now.